But I love the fact that when you're employing these people full time and you have 150 villagers that you're employing full time, it's doing something amazing for that. It's, you know, you're putting commerce back into the society. They can feed people. I'm sure one villager would probably support an entire family. Probably your 150 villagers would probably support a community of 500 or more people directly.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. It's my absolute pleasure to introduce our guest today, Ben Kasserman from wandererbracelets.com. Welcome to the call.
Thanks, James. Excited to be here.
The reason for our call is in just a few weeks from the time of recording this, you're heading over to Australia to talk about how to scale an e-commerce business at my Super Fast Business Live event, which we'll also record in case someone listening to this wants to catch up with that session. And the real story behind your introduction to me is that we were sitting beside each other at a dinner in San Diego at Ezra Firestone's conference afterwards, and you were just sharing with me this incredible journey you've been on with your own business. And I said to you, please come and share this story with our audience, because it was, there was a couple of things there. Firstly, a lot of people are, I think, trying to find out what they should do with their life or what they want to sell is a big common question. And in your case, it just was there. It was surrounding you, and you recognized it. So that was one part of it. And the second part is, you're quite a young man and you've scaled a significant business, producing hundreds of thousands of units, selling e-commerce, and you've got a large team. You have, I think, 40 people in your Western team, the United States, and then you've got 150 people in your Bali team. So that's a significant impact that you're having on the universe in terms of creating stuff. So that's how this came about. And today we're going to talk about what's involved in growing a business quickly and at scale, but also, and most importantly, remotely, because you're not sitting in an office every day, are you, Ben?
No, I'm not. I've got an office in Florida now as we've grown. We just opened a full office a couple of weeks ago. But over the last 2 years since I started the business, I've spent a lot of time in Bali, Florida, Hawaii, Seattle, Oregon, San Diego, San Francisco, LA, Austin, New York, Australia, Bangkok, the Gili Islands. So I've spent more time remote than I have been in one place or with one team or the other. And that allows me to spend a lot of time with people I care about and meet people that I would never be able to meet otherwise. Tap into new communities and nurture relationships. You know, you meet somebody at a conference and a couple weeks later you happen to be in their city, and that's where the real magic happens and the exchange of ideas takes place.
And I think that's what happened to us. How old were you when you started Wanderer Bracelets?
I was 21 years old when I was lost riding my motorbike through the jungle and came across Carver that was carving sustainable natural water buffalo bone like they've been carving up in the mountains there for generations. And I didn't really know what I was getting into, but I thought it was cool, you know? So I drew an infinity sign on a sheet of paper and asked him if he would make a little pendant for me. I thought I could make a piece of jewelry with it to give to a friend. And I realized that he and a lot of his friends were really struggling to earn a living with their traditional craft, which is carving. And a lot of them were faced with kind of the option of taking migrant labor jobs. Like they might go cut down trees in the rainforest or go pour concrete on the job site. And that kind of broke my heart. I wanted to be able to see them, you know, be able to stay with their families and continue to practice their cultural art, and didn't want to see that disappear. And when I found that out, I was kind of determined to see if I could come up with something that I might be able to create a market for. And I found e-commerce was a way to be able to have an impact on the situation that I came across.
So essentially, you have found supply in this village, and then you've taken it to people who wouldn't ordinarily travel on their motorcycle out into the backwoods of Bali, and they can now access these carvings and the jewelry. What makes the product different or special? Because I guess there are local markets in pretty much every major city. There's going to be a weekend markets where people are selling handmade jewelry.
Yeah.
How did you get to be producing hundreds of thousands of these items? Like, what makes someone want to buy it?
Yeah. So when I met these guys, they were carving kind of like tribal jewelry. Like they might make little hook necklaces that you might see a surfer wear. There just wasn't a big market for it. You know, they might have hundreds laying around stockpiled and they couldn't move them. And that's where a lot of the struggle was. There wasn't product market fit that was scalable, especially in the US market where I'm from. And I sat there and I just love making things. I love handicrafts. So I started playing with all kinds of concepts. I made rings and earrings and necklaces, and I made some bracelets, and I headed down to the co-working space that I was working out of and showed them to my friends, and they're like, wow, these are so cool. So I did a think tank and they all gave me feedback, and they decided that I should really focus in on the bracelets because, you know, kind of everybody can wear them. You know, it's not limited to one gender, and the sizing's a little bit simpler than other products. And so that's kind of what I honed in on and continued to develop the product. So I spent a lot of time figuring out how to make a bracelet that these guys could make with materials they could access to support their livelihoods. So it's kind of taking it to the next step and not just finding something that somebody's already making, but looking at, okay, here's the skill sets and here's the materials that they have and how can we take this to the next level? And I think that lesson's applicable in kind of whatever product or market you end up getting in. Even if you find a supplier that makes the world's best cocktail shaker or just a standard cocktail shaker and you want to bring that product to market is one example. If you can find some way to add a new dynamic element to that cocktail shaker or bring it to a new market in a new way, maybe it's a new color, a new style, a new theme that resonates with your audience, that can get you a lot more traction than just going and picking a random product and bringing it to market.
Right. It brings to mind a technique called Scamper, which is a brainstorming creativity technique, which helps you figure out new ways to bend an idea around. It's like to reframe stuff. Have you heard of that one?
No, I haven't heard of that. That sounds cool though. It's up my alley.
Yeah, it is. It's basically SCAMP as an acronym, mm-hmm. but you take an idea or a product, for example, and you think S is substitute. How could I substitute this product? Or C is combine. How could I combine this product? So like you might find a villager making beautiful strings, and then you might find a villager making a beautiful carving, and then you say, hey, I could combine them into a necklace. How can you adapt? So how can you adapt it for a new purpose? How could I modify it? So that's what you did when you changed it from the traditional hook to an infinity sign.
Yeah.
How can I put it to another use? So you might take jewelry that people wear casually and turn it into a high-end product for rappers. How can I eliminate, what can I take out of this to make it different, or how could I reverse it? What would be the opposite of this? So it's basically to prod and prompt ideas around things. So if you've got a very common product, and you know, jewelry is a pretty old market, I imagine, it could be something to jog it. But anyway, what we really want to talk about is, how do you manage to do this remotely? You know, you and I have been able to tap into a business model that does not necessarily require you to be in a specific place at all times. And in your case, it's even more impressive because you've got physical product. You actually have a thing. And I imagine it's, you know, it's got to be produced. It's got to be shipped. So you've got logistics. You've got to store it. You've got, you know, you've got to drive traffic. You no doubt have got to provide some kind of customer support at this kind of scale. There may be returns. So there's a lot of elements to your business, but you've grown it really well. And some people would say, oh, well, you know, to build a business of this sort of scale, you're going to have to go and be in an office. You've got to have your team right there where you can, you know, be eyes and ears open all the time. And I guess we should start with, firstly, what's the mindset around how it works for you? Did you decide, hey, you know, I'm 21, I'm cruising around on my motorbike and in a cool country, I really don't think I'm ready yet to strap on a suit and tie and go into corporate life for my e-commerce business? Where did it end up?
Yeah, so I started it, you know, just sitting there in my bedroom in Bali and started kind of dreaming up the ideas. And then I launched a Kickstarter in December 2014. So to do that, I realized I needed to be able to fulfill the units and ship stuff out and kind of like build up some awareness on the ground. So I came back to the US in the fall of 2014 when I launched the Kickstarter campaign. And at the time I was operating the business out of a small, like 2 meter by 2 meter storage shed in my backyard. And, you know, would ship the bracelets out. And during that time, I started jumping around the US. So I went to Seattle for a couple weeks. I went to New York for a week, and I was able to meet up with people. And I found that like, just the like creating that serendipity of being in places where I had been able to connect with incredible people in my travels and be able to circle back, that's where a lot of the magic happens. And you can get into those juicy conversations over dinner, drinks, coffee, whatever it is, and they can steer you in the right direction. I mean, you can do the same thing on Skype or different mediums like email, but it's just easier for me, I know, to make time for people when they're in the same locale that I am. So I've really incorporated travel into my growth strategy. But as far as like working with a team, there's a couple basic principles that thankfully I had been exposed to early on. I had gone to a talk at one of the co-working spaces where a guy talked about how he built his remote teams. One of the books that he recommended was Work the System, which talks all about how to document and systematize a process and create a standard operating procedure. And he showed us how he created a wiki structure using a Google site. So he just made, you know, a free Google site that you can make, was able to build out outlines and fill out information on how to do everything under the idea that anything that you might have to do twice, you need to document, because you might not remember how to do it, or somebody else might be the one who's needing to do it next. And that's how you can grow something rapidly. So as I built my organization, that was one of the core tenets of our culture was, you know, I don't want anybody writing anything down on paper. We're not going to have a book or a journal somewhere that has the how-tos of how this business is going to run. We need to be able to have this accessible in a database that everyone within our company can access and edit. And this will be a continually evolving document. And that allowed me to bring on my first employee and second employee and third employee and scale rapidly.
Work the System is a fantastic book. I interviewed Sam Carpenter on this show. Superfast Business has a great episode with Sam. And I've met him at live events. It's funny you should say how important it is to go. I saw him in Santa Barbara and I said, Sam, let's do a podcast. And he really enjoyed that show. So I refer people to that. And I think he gives away a version of the book from his website. So Work the System is awesome. We have a very similar concept as well, standard operating procedures. And I love that. I view it as like the skeleton that you can flesh out a business on, that if you don't have it, it's not going to support the business. There's two things I want to just ask you about. Just as a side note, how important is it to go to live events as part of your learning and growth phase?
Going to live events has been huge as a part of the whole growth process. So it's going to live events. So some of the events I attend are traffic and conversion. I went to Superfast Business last year. I have also gone to some events that are specific to my product and industry. So being what we call a social entrepreneur, or having a business that has a double bottom line, which is impact as well as, you know, your revenue number, your profit margin, it's important for me to be involved in communities that support that. So I joined a community called Starting Block, where they have 4 events around the US every year and 2,500 fellows that I can tap into that are in that same space. So I'd encourage you, like if you're in CPGs and you're making skincare products, like go to events in that space and meet other people who are doing similar things, because it'll save you a lot of time, money, and mistakes and kind of point you in the right direction. And you find that the more you give in these types of communities, the more that will be shared with you. You know, I know at times I've given my entire wiki to other people in different groups that I'm a part of. And then, you know, 3 months later, they give me a software recommendation that's a game changer for my business. And I think that openness is a big part of it. And kind of that authenticity and vulnerability, if you can exhibit that and share that with others in these communities, that's how you have the most rewarding experiences.
Yes, and I presume CPG stands for consumer packaged goods.
Yep.
Right. So I also agree. We share a lot of standard operating procedures inside Superfast Business membership. where I just take the blueprints that we've used in our business and I share them with members. Because like you, we went through a rapid scaling phase where we had over 60 people in our business for a virtual product. So it's all in the cloud somewhere. But I love the fact that when you're employing these people full time and you have 150 villages that you're employing full time, it's doing something amazing for that. It's, you know, you're putting commerce back into the society. They can feed people. I'm sure one villager would probably support an entire family. Probably your 150 villages would probably support a community of 500 or more people directly.
Yeah, most of them have 2 to 4 kids. 70% of our workers are women. 80% of them work from home, just coming once a week to our central little operation. My business partner over there, he built a house on his land for me to live in when I was there this past summer. So I spend still about 5 months of the year over there on the ground working with them, which is a 12-hour time difference from my team in Florida. So there's a lot of, you know, late nights and early mornings working, but it's cool to be able to be in both parts of the world, in a place that 5 years ago I couldn't have gotten Wi-Fi in this area that I built my house in the jungle. So it's neat to be involved in that little wrinkle in time where for the first time you can be connected and be remote. Some of the things that have helped me in like working with my team in the US, because I've got a team of graphic designers, photographers, I've worked with copywriters, worked with, you know, I have an HR person, a CFO, lawyers, accountants. I've realized there's some tools that are kind of like baseline have to have. One of the things that we did is we use Slack instead of email and Asana, those two tools. So Slack is for like our immediate messaging. And a lot of you guys on this call probably already are using this tool. And then we use...
Yeah, you're definitely preaching to the choir here. <It's...
laughs> Asana for project management. But there's always somebody in the room who's holding on to their email inbox and waking up every day with 150 emails. So if you haven't gotten rid of that...
Well, you're not from the email generation either, Ben. That's one thing I noticed with my team. We had 60 something people in our business. We all had Google email accounts, and we were using Skype. And I got the report on, you know, how many emails are sent and received. And you know, I had by far and away the most. I had like hundreds and hundreds. The next closest to me in my entire team over an entire month didn't even crack 100 emails. And I'm like, what are they doing? And I found out they're using Skype and they're using Viber and they're using any kind of messaging platform other than email. And so Slack was a game changer for us because that's how they communicate. And now that's how I communicate as well. So emails just cut right back to almost nothing. And I discovered that this, you know, anyone in their 20s is really far more message centric than, and you can see the effort that Facebook are putting into converting us all to Messenger and, you know, trying, they were, you know, with Snapchat, etc., and WhatsApp. These things have been so popular because that's how people want to communicate.
Yeah.
So Slack and Asana, what else do you use? You already mentioned Google Sites. Do you still use those or did you switch that across to Asana?
Yeah, we're still using Google Sites for all our SOPs and we embed videos in there. A lot of times, like if somebody's being onboarded, we'll have an entire Asana project that's dedicated to onboarding that position. You can make a copy of it, assign it to them, and then you can watch them check off all the different training modules for their job. Like in our business, we run our own fulfillment shipping center. So we have multi-step processes for every part of you know, from printing the packing slip to shipping the package out the door. And that's all done in our center in Florida. We also built and opened our own retail store, which has been a really neat experience. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more at the conference.
Fantastic. Well, Sam Carpenter talks about in Work the System, how you need to get your stakeholders on board with these procedures and that they're fluid. They constantly change. Do you have enough confidence now that the team are updating these things, you know, and that you don't have to create the SOPs, because that's one of the biggest concerns people have around them. They've got the tool and then they have this overload. Wow, I've got to go and create all the steps. And I found usually the team are going to create the standard operating procedures and maintain them way better than I do.
Definitely. And I think that's why it's so important that you have people on your team, especially if they're in management, read and understand that book Because sometimes you'll be working with somebody and, you know, they have past management experience, but it didn't involve that type of like team dynamic in modifying the standard operating procedures. And then you quickly find out that they're becoming overwhelmed when they're looking at just the number of modifications that have to take place when you're, you know, in our shipping center, they probably manage at least 100 different pages within the wiki for everything from how to take the trash out the right way to, you know, where you can go to update the billing information on a stamps.com account. But these are all things that have to be done over and over again. And if the managers can buy into the system and then get their teams to buy into the system to communally take ownership of our operating procedures, it makes everything just so much more streamlined.
Yes, and if you have strong systems, it allows you to hire people with very little experience because they can be trained, and that's a huge difference. You can acquire them at a more reasonable wage rate. It puts less pressure on them because they don't have to have 5 years in the exact same role somewhere else to be able to qualify for the job. All these nonsense criteria that people put on job descriptions.
Yeah, and then it's a great opportunity for those employees too to be able to kind of move up the ladder so that their next job they have after working for you can be something at an even higher level, which is cool too.
Oh, of course. It's all about letting them find their role within your business where they can truly tap into their skills. So, I mean, I'm excited about this because I'm talking about that topic at Superfast Business Live. I'm doing a whole session on team and the four mistakes people make. And I'm doing a whole session on building a business to sell. So scaling and team are absolutely hand in hand, tied together. You don't scale without team. You don't have team without systems. So you're speaking my language. And what sort of challenges have you found being in a different part of the world to the bulk of your labor force?
Yeah, I think some of the biggest challenges are just kind of those daily touchpoint communications that people expect to have. And things like implementing set meeting structures. So that way when I'm in Bali and it's 1 a.m. and I'm too tired to be able to like really process what's going on, having the purpose, objective, agenda, and deliverables outlined for meetings ahead of time has been big. Putting in a daily stand-up, which I'm sure you're going to talk about at the conference, and one-on-ones with your team members on a monthly basis so that you can really touch in on everybody's emotional state, personal state, and answer any questions to make sure their voice feels heard. That's one of the most important things. Another book that I've read recently that has been really helpful is the book Nonviolent Communication, which kind of sounds like an intimidating title.
Is that about Gestalt?
It's about like how to effectively communicate with others in all kinds of situations. I'm not sure the term that you use.
Oh, it's basically a description of that kind of language.
Oh, cool.
It's talked about in the entrepreneurs' circles, but Gestalt communication, it's exactly that. It's some of those, it's a very violent language that's forceful. It's like, you didn't think to do this and stuff like that, or, you know, you must do this or you must do
yeah.
that, or this is what
yeah.
you should do. And those sort of word tracks create a horrible reaction with team members because it's like you've taken away their ability to think. You haven't really considered their point of view.
Exactly. And yeah, and with NBC, you're able to like express, here's my needs. When you do this, it makes me feel this way. I need you to do X, you know? And that makes it so much easier to communicate. And I've found myself sometimes when I'm trying to push, instead I need to just kind of step back and say, hey, here's what I need. And then you end up having a more genuine conversation back and forth. You can understand their point of view and often get to the outcome that you desire in a much quicker and more peaceful way.
We'll link to an article about Gestalt language and why you need to know it. And I appreciate the book review as well. I was also wondering if you're doing anything like 4DX or OKRs, you know, four disciplines of execution.
Yeah, I'm midway through that book right now, actually.
Yeah. So it's all good. That's all good fun. It's about basically about everyone agreeing on what's really important and knowing that they have the ability to impact it, and then having regular updates. And because you mentioned meetings, if your meetings are based around how we're moving towards our combined goal, I mean, OKRs, objectives and key results, are what drive companies like Google. So
Yeah.
It's a great topic to get into, but not on this call. So challenges of having those meetings and interactions. I also found when you're doing a new project, you often have to just commit to a lot more energy with regard to, you know, especially training and setting up the bumper rails to make sure people don't slide into the gutters. It's far more demanding. And as my team gets older, as in they've been with me for between 5 and 7 years, it requires far less energy to run because they're really on track now. They know exactly what they're doing. They have context. I'd be interested in how do you make decisions on what you should spend your day on? Do you have a routine? Is your calendar blocked out like a sad, you know, life-sucking commitment schedule, or is it fairly open?
That's a good question. It depends on the time of year and where I am. So like the first 2.5 weeks of this year, I went to Bali and I just had almost 20 days by myself in my house with my hammock. And that was my agenda. I had a call or two in the morning and evening, and I just gave myself that freedom. For the last like 12 days, I've been on a city to city tour. So I went from San Francisco to LA to Las Vegas to New York to Austin. And I've had meetings, almost breakfast, lunch, dinner, conferences every day of the week. So I kind of go back and forth between these two different paradigms. There's a really good book on polarity management and how you can kind of balance these two parts of you, that part of you that kind of wants to be at a desk working, or a part of you that wants to be out networking, and how to balance that. Because as an entrepreneur, it can be really tough. So some of the things that I've done to help manage that are, I know what are the key meetings that I need to have with all the people on my team every week, and I make a priority to have those. And then, you know, I plan those out a week to 10 days in advance. That's been really helpful. And then, you know, incorporating a lot of the most important things in my day that I can't really go without, from having a little bit of time by myself to answer and respond to emails, a call to my best friend, making time for a walk on the beach. If I'm in Florida, I go paddleboarding every morning for an hour and a half and look for manatees and stingrays and starfish. So just incorporating nature into my life is a really important part too. And even though I'm traveling and I'm constantly in different time zones and cities, I try to make sure that those major blocks are kind of checked off on the calendar each week.
Yeah, that's very soulful. And I think it reflects through in your product. It's the thing that I notice about you is your chilledness and your authenticity. I think you have a good story because it's true, it's soulful. You've genuinely seen an opportunity to be able to help people, and in order to help people, it's okay to create value and to reinvest as you grow back into hiring more of the people who you're helping, and to put something good into the lives of your consumers, because you're obviously making a difference to them. I'm sure some of your customers would buy jewelry because of the cause, marketing, the fact that they're doing something nice, but the bulk of them are probably buying it because of getting something for themselves. But if everyone can win from that process, then that's a lovely way to do it. And just to recap, you've been able to take this from, you know, as a 21-year-old cruising around on your motorbike in Bali, you've been able to build this into a large, like a very substantial e-commerce business by setting up standard operating procedures, using some tools like Google Sites, Slack, and Asana. You've studied and learned things like work the system, and you've understood about peak workflows and having time off and resting. You value learning and going to events, and I don't think you've finished yet. I think you're still scaling at a massive rate. I will ask you one question around hiring. As you grow, how do you know who should hire next? What do you need the most?
That's a really good question. One of the things that I always recommend to people is the iPad Pro. Here's my product push for Apple. But the iPad Pro has this app called Paper, and it allows you to draw little circles, and then you can write names and roles in it. And it gives you the ability to do org charts in a way that I can't do on a whiteboard or on a sheet of paper, because on a sheet of paper, you can't just move things around with your finger. So like every other week, I'm making org charts and kind of experimenting with like, what would it look like if I set up the organization in this way or added somebody here? And would that give somebody else more time? At one point in my organization, we did this project because we had scaled our marketing team quite a bit and we hadn't yet outsourced much to agencies yet. I wanted to really figure out what everybody on my team was spending their time on. So we started using a tool called Tracking Time that connected with Asana that allowed everybody to track the amount of times they were spending on different projects. And that allowed me to say to my like photographer and my graphic artist, hey, why don't we go hire you an assistant who can do some of these projects like our tabletop product photography that's taking so much time out of your day to allow you to focus on higher level projects, things like that. So if I hadn't done those tracking time things, I wouldn't have been able to see what was really bogging down the time for my team. And then just kind of looking to the future and asking other entrepreneurs, how's your team set up, you know, and getting them to show you kind of like behind the curtain. That's been a lot of the inspiration. And I've shared job descriptions with people and they've shared job descriptions back with me. And that's helped. The other thing that I highly recommend in a startup is every quarter going in and having your team write their own job descriptions and then coming together and tweaking them so that they're all kind of written in the same format. And you see how everybody's jobs transition. When you grow as fast as we have, nobody's doing the same thing quarter to quarter. It's always evolving.
That's the beauty of having a centralized impact goal where people can come at it from their angle, and it's just so simple and it makes sense. I love what you're doing. Gosh, it's so funny because I always keep mapping my business over and over again. When we went through various iterations of up to 10 different profit centers, I literally had to write it on the whiteboard over and over again to just drum it into my head because it's all virtual. There's nothing I could touch. And with our team in different various units, et cetera, it ended up making it easier for us to sell parts of the business because we knew which bits went where. So I'm going to be talking about that in both the team section and scaling a business. And I'm just fascinated to see how aligned what you're talking about is with what I've been experiencing. So there must be something to this. How would you describe Superfast Business Life to someone having already been to one before? What was interesting about the event for you?
Oh man, the location's awesome just to start. Such a beautiful time of year to be there. But the energy in the room was so cool. Everybody's so excited to be there. And I think even just if I was in the room and I couldn't even hear anything anybody was talking about on the stage, it would be an incredible experience because you're able to connect with so many other people next to you who are opting in to be at this event to say, hey, how can I do something different or grow the business that I already have. And I think that expands your mind in so many ways. And then just being such a big conference as far as the speaker lineup goes, but such an intimate setting, you have the ability to walk up and talk to the speakers afterwards, which is something that you don't get to do at a lot of the bigger conferences that I go to in the US. So that was a really neat part of it.
Yeah, thank you. That's very kind. Now, if someone was interested in exploring Wanderer bracelets, what is your most popular product? Which product would you direct people to say, hey, get a feel for what we do?
Facebook actually did a case study on us. That's a cool one to check out if you just type in Facebook case study Wanderer bracelets on one of our ad campaigns last year. That's neat to look up. And then on our product, you can go read our story page and then go to our all products page. One of my favorite products is our coordinates bracelet. When I was in college, I had the idea because I wanted to give all of my buddies the coordinates of our favorite surf spot. And I couldn't find somebody that was making coordinates bracelets. And I kind of kept that idea tucked in the back of my mind. And years later, when I started this jewelry business, we started laser engraving the bracelets. We would make them in Bali, ship them over, and laser engrave them here in the U.S. And that's one of my favorites because like right now I'm wearing the bracelet of where I met one of my best friends back in high school. And I gave her a matching bracelet last week, you know, and it's really special for us. And I know that has brightened the lives of a lot of people in the U.S. because it allows them to keep that memory close. Valentine's Day, those were very popular. A lot of guys scored some bonus points with those bracelets. For
sure. Oh, I can imagine.
Yep.
Well, we're recording this 2 weeks after Valentine's Day, so we probably want to think of the next occasion. But know that if you're supporting Wanderer Bracelets, you're supporting villagers, and you know, you're making this a great business. So, Ben, thanks for coming along and sharing. This is really just a little window into stuff that we'll be talking about in a couple of weeks. I want to thank you for putting aside the time. I'll let you go back to whatever it is you're up to, wherever you are in the world, and look forward to seeing you in a few weeks.
Thanks so much. Looking forward to it.
That was Ben Kasserman from WandererBracelets.com. I'm James Shramko. You've been listening to SuperFastBusiness.com.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out SuperFastBusiness.com.